Good morning. Welcome to the Dean Richards Show. Jim Tirano, Elton Jim, filling in for Dean Richards this morning. Short show. We've got Northwestern basketball at 10:45, so we've really got about an hour and 45 minutes, but that is more than enough time to wake you up and have a good time here on the radio. Yes, I know you're disappointed. Dean isn't here. So am I. But listen anyway. We're going to have some fun here. We're going to do our best to jam in at least 3 or 4 pounds of radio baloney into a one-pound bag. Dave Schwann is here. Hello, Schwannaroo.
Hey, good morning. How you doing there? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you as well. Did you have a nice ringing in of 2025?
It was very quiet, but that's just the way we wanted it.
Oh, I know. Me too. Yeah, those days are over.
Pretty much, yeah.
When you were a young kid, did you ever go out? I don't see or hear this anymore. When I was a little kid, we at New Year's Eve, when the clock struck 12, we used to go outside with, like, pots and pans.
Yeah.
Did you ever do that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we did. And in fact, I have some really great memories of my parents throwing some terrific New Year's Eve parties, inviting the neighbors, you know, everybody knew everybody. And we just had the best time. But, yes, we made noise.
Right.
It didn't matter, though, because everybody was at our house, so we weren't waking up anybody.
I mean, now every so often I am hearing fireworks. People are...
Yeah, I heard a couple early in the morning.
Whoa, I don't know what the hell that was.
Yeah. Also, when I was in my 20s, we had an area where I grew up. In a local community center, we would have a DJ and, you know, food and so forth on New Year's Eve, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, no, and in fact, did you used to do things on New Year's Day as well?
No, pretty much stayed in, and my father being a huge, Big Ten football person, if Michigan was in the Rose Bowl, everything else stopped.
Yeah, well, not only did what happened with us was that my parents and my extended family, the adults would all go out to, you know, the big New Year's Eve parties, and then the kids, I had a cousin that was just old enough to babysit. I still question the wisdom of having her. She wasn't that much older than us, but I guess they trusted her and they knew we weren't crazy. But so we were at home, about 4 or 5 of us, and then we would, you know, stay up all night. And like I said, we'd go out with the pots and pans, and then parents would come home 1 or 2 in the morning. But then by 1 o'clock, the next day, you know, big Italian family, we were at one of my aunt's house for the open door, you know, on New Year's Day, and everybody just would come in, whether they were hungover or tired.
Yeah,
and
it come was in, a, stay for a while. Bring
yeah,
some
there
food,
was
eat.
There was yeah there was yeah. always food there, and it was like a whole day affair. Yeah, that was a big thing. But nowadays, to your point, Dave, yeah, now it's. Me and my wife.
The quieter, the better.
Yeah. We do, at least at this point, we do make it to midnight, but now not much after.
Here's the other thing, too. I had to be here at 4:30 New Year's morning.
Oh, no.
And, of course, we had the terrible story out of New Orleans, you know, right when we got into work. New Year's Day morning with the you know the killings there, so we definitely had our hands full starting off 2025 with another very tragic story.
Hasn't this been a crazy year
between that and now we're following the fires
LA.
In California? Yes,
I mean, think about it. You know, it seemed with all this kind of tragedy, right, to your point, right off the bat on New Year's Day, so early in the morning. You realize it's only, what, the 12th? We're only 12 days into this year. It seems like it's been 3 months because we've just been bombarded.
Yeah,
with major types of stories,
and keep in mind also the big storm that just missed us, by the way.
Oh,
my went
gosh.
Through the mid-Atlantic, the southeastern U.S. getting a lot of snow. There were several thousand flights canceled down there yesterday.
They don't know how to handle
some very cold weather here the next couple of days.
Yeah, the South does not know how to handle snow. I was in Atlanta one time, and it was early in the morning. And it had snowed overnight. It was. You would have thought that, you know, you had a blizzard. I'm not exaggerating. I know I tend to, but this time I'm being serious. a half inch of snow, half inch, and it was wet. You know, it wasn't like puffy and it was wet. The city shut down. The city literally shut down. I'm watching the morning news shows. The anchors are saying, "Were you able to get in today?"
Yeah.
And so I had a car. I had a rent a car. I literally had, they closed the school. I had the whole city to myself. I was driving around. There wasn't a car on the streets at 8 or 9 in the morning because everybody was so freaked out about a half inch of snow.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable.
Yeah, you see that story quite often through there.
Yeah.
I would imagine we'll be seeing reports like that coming up here in the next couple of days also. Yeah.
And then it was weird this the last couple of days, because I had a birthday this week on Wednesday, and that's when the fires really kicked in. They started on Tuesday, but they really made their biggest headway and the most damage all day Wednesday. And so I'm watching this, and it wasn't the best kind of backdrop for a birthday to
watch
all these fires and everything.
Right. Yeah.
And I have to say, anybody sending cards, it's a great, it's a nice thing to do. You know, you get your Christmas cards, your birthday cards. But, you know, just as a little hint, when you reach a certain age, you do not want the birthday card with the number. You know, you know those cards with the numbers. It's great when you're 21 or 18 or 17 or 10, but when you get to a certain number, I don't want to see the numbers anymore. In fact, I usually say at this point, like, you know how they have the demographics that say, oh, there's, you know, 18 to 35 and then 35 to 50, you know, 34 to 55 and all that stuff. And then there's this big block that is 55 and over.
Over, right. I'm way over.
Yeah. You know what I say now? They say, how old are you? I said, I'm and over.
I'm
not giving you any more hints. I'm just and over. But please, if you do know how old I am, and I'm not going to say, stop with the number cards. No more numbers. I'll celebrate the day. I'm not celebrating the numbers anymore.
I've got a big one coming up next year.
Ooh, is it between 6 and 8?
Yes.
Oh, well, you know what, Dave?
Not 6 years old and 8 years old.
No, I know, but you know what, Dave? I
might have to send that times 10.
But you know what, Dave? I might have to send you that 70 card anyway.
Hey, we have Kevin Wells in for Andy.
Yes, I never met you before. Yeah. Hi, Kevin.
Hey, good to talk to you. How are you?
Good to talk to you. He's got his Blackhawks hat on.
Staying warm.
Yeah, no kidding.
Blackhawks hat on, WGN jacket.
Oh, I know. Boy, this is a team player here.
Yeah, company man.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Schwanee's got a WFYR t-shirt. Shirt on. What are you doing there, Swanee?
That one hasn't fit in 30 years.
What was that out in the hallway, by the way? I saw a WFYR thing sitting on the counter out there.
You did?
Know.
Really?
There was some sort of radio station merchandise sitting out on the counter out there. I don't know.
Take a look at that.
I don't know.
I haven't heard about any sales yet. We'll see what's going on. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards this morning. Stay tuned. We got lots to do in a very little time. We'll be back after this. No switching. Jim Toronto, Elton Jim filling in for Dean Richards today. As I was saying before, I did have a birthday over the last couple of days. I share it with Elvis Presley and with David Bowie and Stephen Hawking and Newlywed Game and Card Sharks host Bob Eubanks. So not a bad birthday to share. January 8th is the day, by the way. And I have to say, I'm even as I was talking to Dave Schwan before about the number. Hey, Schwan, when is your birthday?
Oh, mine isn't for a long time.
Oh, you've got some time.
Yeah, it's in August.
Ah, so you can still pretend that you're young for the next.
Well, you know, you were mentioning you don't want to see the numbers on cards anymore.
No.
I get it. And then you just say you're and over.
And over. That's age from now.
I hear more and more from people, certainly my age and younger, saying, oh, we're old.
Old,
I disagree.
Oh, definitely,
I disagree.
Yeah.
I say we're older.
Older is
the key.
We're
older. We may not be as young as we used to be, but I do not consider myself old.
Yeah, for any of you folks 40 and younger, And Dave, we're surrounded by them here today.
Oh, yes.
Kevin, now you're probably at an age where you don't mind telling people, right?
No, I don't mind. I am 27.
See, how look at how fast he did that, Dave.
Okay, I'm going to leave now.
I'm 27. I don't even remember being 27. I don't even know. And our producer today is Colin McCarthy. Was it McCarthy?
Yes.
Yeah. So, Colin, how old are you?
I'm also 27.
Oh, 27. You know what, Dave? If you add both of their ages, they're still younger than us.
Yeah, they are.
You can send me all the 28 cards you want.
Oh, see, that's what I'm saying.
They really are. You're right.
See how fast? Yeah, I mean, wow. Is that how long it took you to add 27 times plus 27, Dave? Quick hint, it's 54.
This is why I'm in radio. I'm not a mathematician.
Wow. He's got his abacus over there. Okay, let's see. Two blue dots, two green ones. No, but you see how fast? They said their age.
I'll tell you something,
they
gentlemen.
They didn't say, like, should I lie by a year? Should I say that's not polite to ask
a person's age?
Yeah, but they just blurted it out.
I think you'll agree with me, Jim, that for both Colin and for Kevin here, once you hit 30, you won't believe how fast the time goes.
Oh, I'll tell you, it is scary. And it's so cliched.
It is cliched, but it's true.
I know, and right now you should see their eyes rolling.
No, I believe you guys.
But it is amazing.
Please do.
Yeah, I mean, it's just when I think back, how many years ago I was in high school. I don't even. I mean, I was in high school longer than you've been alive.
Last year was our 50th class reunion.
Dave, what are you doing? What are you doing? Why are you giving out all this information?
I don't mind it. I really don't mind it.
Oh my God, I'm already like thinking in my head. Okay, I want to be this age. So what year now do I start? You know, I mean, like, remember when you wanted to first drink? You know. And so you had to add what year you would be if you were to be 21. So if someone asked you, or if you had a fake ID, you knew whatever year you were, you knew the 21 year of when you turned 21. All your friends, you all knew that year. Mm-hmm. The irony is, when you get older, you don't want that number to be higher. You go backwards. You know, I'm pushing that number ahead. So I'm like, okay, now I got to figure out, how do I become younger? You want to be older when you're 18. I want to be younger at this point.
You enjoy being carded at the bar.
Oh, I give if somebody cards me, yeah. I give them $20.
You nice. Take it as a compliment.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
I
no,
give
I tip
them $20.
Yeah,
but I
did. Yeah. No, if you want money from me at a bar, if you're a good bartender, you will say, "Can I see your ID?" you will be on a Mexican vacation by the time I leave the bar. Because I will tip you. I mean, every so often when someone asks, I just look at them and go, "Really? You really want to know how old I am? Wow, you think so?"
And this is not even meant to sound tone deaf, but it was my New Year's resolution this year, was to really enjoy living in Chicago and being the age that I am, because I cannot believe that my freshman year of college was a decade ago.
See that? Now see that? And we
just
all
wait.
Yeah, yeah. Oh yeah.
Well, that's what I mean. I don't mean it to sound tone deaf at all to the conversation.
No, no,
no,
blows,
no, no. But now you're just adding to my point here about. Yeah. How fast it really goes.
Yeah, I've got a godson who is turning 40.
Yeah, my godson just turned 32.
Yeah.
He'll be 33
this year. He's turning 40. I spoke to him over the holidays, and I'm like, wait, what? I mean, to think, I have pictures. I remember the night he was born.
Oh, yeah.
The early morning when I got the phone call. I remember that as clear as day. And if you told me that was 40 years ago, wow.
Yeah. So I do need to call him quite seriously, because he is living in Los Angeles. And
I'm
very concerned about, the status of things.
Oh, that was, like I said, it really put something of a damper on my birthday, because I was watching these, the destruction. It's, like I said, especially on Wednesday, that's when those fires all through the day and especially at night were really starting to take, you know, to expand, and there was no containment, and a lot of
there's
the
very little now.
I know, still, yeah. Which is, I mean, the sad part is this is not over. We're kind of talking about it in the past tense, and the sad part is, from what I understand, the Santa Ana winds are supposed to blow pretty strong.
That's
today.
Right. That's right. The latest number we saw from the Palisades fire was a 10% containment.
Yeah,
that's all.
That, yeah. And, yeah. And what's so interesting now, you know, it's funny, whenever there's any kind of a tragedy like this, we start to learn the jargon of that specific event. So now containment is a big word, and I never really figured, I thought containment meant they were putting the fire out, but really, all containment means is that they've been able to create a perimeter around the fire to contain it from spreading. You can have 100% containment and the fire can still be burning. So you need to start to learn the jargon to better understand what's happening out there. Yeah, it's quite a tragedy, and I just pray that that it stops. I have many friends that live out in those areas, and a few of them, none of them have lost their homes, but they have evacuated, and or they certainly packed up. One I know has evacuated, another one has packed up and is ready to go. So it's pretty scary. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards this morning. Dave, do you think that you might be able to help us with some news?
Yes.
Well, then by all means. And it's Jim Toronto here filling in for Dean Richards this morning. And of course, the sound of that distinctive whistle can only mean one thing. It's time for Dave Schwann and his far-flung forecast. Dave Aru.
Well, that's such a nice introduction. Thank you, and good morning, everyone. I hope everyone is safe and warm and dry. And get out your compasses, protractors, and newfangled devices, because we head south to really a town that has been very much in the news here in the past couple of weeks. None other than Plains, Georgia.
Let me just say, you know, is there a difference between the Bill Clinton and a Jimmy Carter impersonation?
There is someone. There is someone.
Yeah, I guess
someone.
Bill is a little down there, and Jimmy was a little more lighter, wasn't he?
More laid back and so forth. But Plains is 2 hours south of Atlanta, Georgia. Its motto has become Home of the 39th President. Was settled back in the 1800s. Its population remains under 1,000, 573 in the 2020 census. Jimmy Carter and his wife lived in the home that they moved into, you know, decades and decades ago. And during his presidency, the town was so popular with visitors and tourists, there were something like 10,000 people a day that went through. And you know what? We were one of them.
Oh, you went to Plains?
We were in Plains when he was president.
How cool.
And I'll tell you, any type of souvenir
right,
or some
peanut,
sort of thing.
Anything with
all
a peanut.
All peanut themed, yes.
Or teeth. Remember the big smile?
Yep,
the
absolutely.
Big teeth.
Absolutely.
Oh, wow.
But Plains, Georgia, you know, Jimmy Carter's hometown and now final resting place. They're affected by this weather, too, incidentally. They had some icing conditions this morning, but the sun is out now in Plains, Georgia. It's 36.
So, I heard that he and Rosalind are, I don't know, was it Rosalind or Rosalind?
I've heard both.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Are both buried, as you said, at the at their home.
The Carter property,
under a willow tree.
Oh, how about that?
Yeah, so they picked a spot on the land. And you know what's funny? Now, you mentioned, what did you say the population of Plains?
573.
So you know what? How fitting that we play the Andy Griffith theme for you, far-flung, because I do remember...
Small town America.
I remember references. I believe Howard Sprague at one time mentioned...
Howard Sprague.
Yes. They were going to... They wanted to put up a statue, and they put up a statue of one of Andy's relatives. This is on the color version, so you might not know these, because I know you're a black and white aficionado.
No, I think I have a memory
of
those.
Well, they wanted to put up... they wanted to put a statue up, and so of course they had the town committee that was comprised of Floyd the barber,
of course,
Clara Edwards,
yes,
Aunt B,
yeah,
Goober, Howard and Andy.
There you go.
Yeah, that was quite.
Did Andy
quite a
have
committee.
To abstain because it was a relative?
Well, that was voted? The thing. They were all talking about how great this ancestor was, and of course, Floyd was mad because Floyd felt that his
he was
ancestor
being slighted. Yeah.
His ancestor, Caleb Lawson, was being slighted. You know, but anyway, at one point, I believe in that episode, Howard refers to Mayberry as having the population of 1,300.
That's about right. I've heard 1,200, 1,300.
Yeah, so that means that Mayberry is actually a booming metropolis.
Twice the size of Plains.
So what do you remember of Plains? Was it basically just a little kind of, you know, four building, one, you know, like one street down the main street?
Definitely a main street. Yeah. You know, low two-story buildings, a typical rural small town that you would see in Illinois, you'd see it in Indiana, know. But boy, when you drove in, you know, this huge sign that said "Home of Our President Jimmy Carter."
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, that was a great spring break trip, though. Yeah. was with my parents, and you know, college students may not, you know, particularly think a spring break trip to Florida with your parents, but we went to Disney World, and we went sailing with our family friends. Oh, so nice. Count me in.
So now,
but that was a side trip to Plains, Georgia at that time.
Well, I was just going to say, so you said it was, 2 hours outside of Atlanta?
Mm-hmm.
So I would have, like, where were you off to make that detour? Like, what was your route?
The route probably was through Atlanta, but we were heading south through Georgia to go into Florida.
Oh, I see.
Ultimately to go to Disney World and then see our friends in where did they live? Cape Coral, I think.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So now at that time when you went, so what year do you think this was? Like
this 77? Was 1977.
Yeah, so you just became president.
Yeah.
So, like, I remember I was a young kid at the time. I am 55. I'm just over. And over is my age.
And you are a youngster.
Oh, pfft.
55.
Yeah. Well, I wish I would. No. I'm 55 and over. And over. No, I'm not 55.
Okay, you're and over.
Oh, Dave, if I could be 55 again,
soon, you know what? We're just going to be over.
Yeah,
that's
I'm
all.
Way over.
No and over.
Oh, yeah. Once again, Colin laughing his butt off over here. I'm not even going to look at him anymore. You're not making a good impression on me, Colin, by laughing at my age. I never met you before, and you're already laughing at me. No, I love you. He's doing a great job. But no, so my question is, when you went, because at that time, remember Billy Carter?
Yes.
Was this kind of semi...
No, he was not a character.
He wasn't, he wasn't a semi-celebrity. He was a huge celebrity.
Yeah.
Remember the Billy Beer? He was a beer-drinking guy.
He had the gas station.
Yeah, so did you see him by any chance?
No, we didn't see anything. We drove by the gas station, and we kind of... You could, if I remember correctly, there was a state highway or a state road that kind of took you close to the Carter farm, but you couldn't get you know,
the Secret Service
there were signs there, they don't even think about it, but but you know, at that time, yes, Billy Carter was still alive. Lillian, his mother, was
she
still
lived
alive.
To be 100.
She was she was well into her 90s, if not 100.
I think she was 100.
Yeah. But there was definitely longevity in the Carter genes there.
Except for Billy. Billy passed away a while ago.
Well, you know, sadly, Billy and I believe a sister of Jimmy Carter's both had cancer issues.
Oh, is that what it was?
And if you recall, when Jimmy Carter was 90, 91, he had a cancer diagnosis.
Well, everybody
figured that.
And not only did he have a cancer diagnosis, it was brain cancer.
Things had gone into the brain.
Right.
Yes. And when he entered hospice, we thought, okay, it's going to be any day now. It was a year and a half.
In fact, I was listening to some radio stations after he, you know, passed, and they were playing about a year and a half ago, or maybe 6 or 8 months ago. I'm not sure the exact time period, but somehow a story got out that he had passed away. And so there were reports 6 or 8 months ago, or even a year ago, because, like, to your point, they mentioned he was now in hospice, and so the thought is, you know, he's not going to be around much longer. And so then this report came out, and so they had reports of TV stations and radio stations reporting that Jimmy Carter had died, but this was a year ago. because
this is why you have to check these things.
Exactly. And so it was so sad because you know, I don't know how aware he was, but you're like, what if he was aware and hearing as he's around and hearing that he's
apparently he was, you know, pretty much aware of what was going on. I saw something several months
before. Well, they said he voted.
He was present. Of course, he was, you know, wheelchair bound when Roslyn died.
Yeah, I saw that.
But there was something I saw online, an interview with one of his grandsons, saying that, you know, even he was surprised at the length of time.
Right.
You know, while he certainly was bedridden and really couldn't do much of anything at all, you know, a year or two before he passed away, he still was aware of what was going on.
Yeah. Well, you know, his presidency is very complex. In terms of what happened, we were in a very horrible economic situation with high inflation, high interest rates, and then compounded by the Iranian hostage crisis.
Yes,
we had huge lines for gas. There was literally, people can't even grasp this. There was no gas at gas stations. People were running, were in line.
Well, the stations would close
early at like 3 in the afternoon.
They had to ration their gas, or they were just plain out of it, and they didn't know when they were going to get another supply.
Yeah, I mean, people literally were in line and ran out of gas while they waited in line. And then they were pushing their cars because it was such a crazy time. So you will be hearing, if you're of a certain age, you'll be hearing a lot of contradictory things. I mean, you there's no question of what Jimmy Carter did after his presidency. And many people say that he probably had more effectiveness as a post-president than he did as president. And he won the Nobel Prize in 2002. But complex presidency in terms of what he accomplished and what kind of president he was, but no question about his character and his integrity.
You know what struck me watching the funeral the other day? He had requested that Gerald Ford give a eulogy. Apparently, he also wanted Walter Mondale, his vice president, to give a eulogy. Both of them died before he did.
Right. And they had,
so his sons, their sons,
they had
gave
relatives,
the eulogy.
Yeah.
And that was pretty amazing.
I was wondering, because when I first heard, they said Stephen Ford and Mondale's son was, and I was like, do they usually do that? Like, does a former president? And that, so then I found out later that, to your point, that that he actually requested that they write a eulogy.
Yes.
Yeah. And yet, he wound up outliving
them. But both of them, he outlived both of them.
By many years, too.
Yes.
By many years.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Anyway. Well, I tell you, that was a great, I love that far flunger today. Plains,
Thank
Georgia.
You.
That's a
yeah.
great one.
Plains, Georgia. And really, you know, it now that he has passed away and we're going to be examining his presidency and post-presidency, it would be a wonderful place to visit. I would go back, and I want to visit the Carter Center in Atlanta. There.
Yeah, it's pretty prominent, it looks like.
Really, very much so. Yeah.
Yeah, very good. Thanks, Dave.
You bet.
Jim Toronto, Elton Jim, filling in for Dean Richards today. Short show. We've only got about an hour or so to go. Not even that. We got Northwestern basketball. The Wildcats will be playing Michigan State. We will be going to the pregame at 10:45, and the tip-off will be at 11. So stay tuned here for another hour or so. We're going to have some interesting talk after the 10 o'clock hour about theater in Chicago. I like to bring in some of the things that that Dean likes to talk about. And so we'll have Charles Askenizer, who is the founder and artistic director of the Invictus Theater here in Chicago. And I also have a little connection with them as well. So we'll have a little fun and interesting talk about what's going on with Invictus after the 10 o'clock hour. We'll take a quick break. Now, in fact, you know, Colin, you want me to read this now, or should I read it after the break? Read it now? Okay. Hey, do you want to, speaking of theater, perfect segue. Do you want to build a snowman? I think you sort of can today. I think we might have packing snow. I think it might be packing snow. It looks fluffy from up here on the 18th floor at 303 Wacker, but I think we might be able to build a snowman. But if you want to, you can catch the regional premiere of Disney's Frozen, the Broadway musical at the Paramount Theater, for only one more week. It's set in the magical kingdom with fantastical characters like Olaf the Snowman and Sven the Reindeer and the sisters Elsa and Anna. They balance life and loyalty and Elsa's struggle to harness her powers. This heartwarming fable about the sisterhood and self-discovery is for audiences of all ages. So use code WGN for $5 off up to four tickets. You can call 630-896-6666. That's 630-896-6666. Or you can just visit ParamountAurora.com today. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards. We'll be back after this. No switching. Good morning, Elton Jim. Jim Toronto. Sunday morning. There's Dino's theme. Filling in for Dean this morning. Only be here for less than an hour. We've got Northwestern Wildcats basketball coming to you, 10:45 for the post game and 11 o'clock tip-off. Wildcats are playing the Michigan State Spartans. So I'm filling in for Dean, but listen anyway. Having a good time here. Filling in. It's been a while. I haven't been on filling in for Dean since June. So getting some of the rust out of my instrument here. I wanted to briefly talk about, it's hard to not be affected by the wildfires in California. If you've been watching these with any kind of regularity over the last several days, it's sad to think that this happened, I believe, on Tuesday in the mid-afternoon or so. And here we are Sunday, and there are still danger notices, evacuation orders. This tragedy is not done yet. There have been lulls, and there's been this sense that we were talking about this these wildfires in the past tense. But from what I understand, the Santa Ana winds, which are the main culprit of this, are supposed to pick up, maybe not be as intense as they were on Tuesday and Wednesday, 70, 80 miles per hour. We're talking tornado-like conditions. But even 30 or 40 miles an hour is still a good wind gust. I mean, just ask Tom Skilling. And certainly enough to spread those ambers, which seem to be the main reason that this thing has spread so quick and so fast and so far. And so, but the one thing that, as I'm watching this, as I said, it was my birthday this week, and that's when the whole thing was happening. So it was kind of a mixed bag. It was kind of hard to watch this happening when you're trying to feel good about the day and seeing people's lives and lifestyles and memories just go up in literally up in smoke within minutes. It looks like the word apocalyptic has been used quite a bit, and it does look I remember one of these stations that I watched had a comparison of what it looked like in Hiroshima after the bomb was dropped in World War II, and what some blocks of Pacific Palisades looked like in the Los Angeles area. And it was very, sadly, it was very similar. I hope that if there's any bright spot, it's a dim bright spot, believe me, but if there's anything that we could take away that is even partially positive, it would be to use this as a learning experience. We have to, this country, no citizens of any country, no country as a whole, ever comes to the aid like the United States. We are great at reacting. If there's a tragedy, people react in a way that even shocks us. And we've seen that kind of unity. Even though we are very divided politically in this country, we still seem to come together when there is a tragedy or an emergency, and we react like no one. First responders, regular citizens, everybody just seems to go into a different mode. And so that while that is something to be proud of, at the same time, it's something that we shouldn't need to do as much. Because sadly, it seems as a society and as a culture, not only here in the United States, but maybe around the world, but we certainly, at least I observe it more because I live here, we don't do as much about prevention. We don't prevent. We react. And by the time we react, we're in the middle of a horrible tragedy, which comes with a loss, you know, with a high price tag, but mostly a loss of property and the worst, the ultimate sacrifice, a loss of life. Now, granted, we don't know what started these wildfires in Los Angeles. But and certainly it may have been a natural occurrence. We're talking about perhaps some electrical lines sparking. The L.A. area has been in a drought for the last 8 or 9 months. Shrubbery is dry. It's basically kindling, and that's why this spread so fast. I understand that. That's a natural occurrence. But the more you start to listen, the more you see that there was a lot of things happening here that was not done to prevent such a thing when you know you live in an area that regularly has wildfires and regularly has these very unpredictable and powerful Santa Ana winds. I'm not saying that this could have been prevented 100%, but to the extent of which it has spread and the destruction and the devastation that has done to property and people's lives, I think that could have been prevented if we could have done steps. We don't like to do things that prevent. Because you know what? From a politician standpoint, it's not sexy. You know, what's fun to do at a press conference is to have a shovel, the golden shovel to break ground, or to have the giant scissors to cut the ribbon, and to have this beautiful rendering of a picture of a new building that's going to go up here. We like to do that. It's not fun to say we're going to spend $10 million to bury the electrical lines underground. That's not sexy. That's not fun to show on a photo op, to just see a big bulldozer and some giant equipment. But we need to start thinking about how we prevent, because we wind up spending five times as much as it would cost if we just spent a little to say, is there a potential problem here? How do we stop it before it starts? I hope we can begin. We could watch this and begin to think about prevention. In fact, I'll tell you, in my mind, if today, right now, at 9:58, if Governor Pritzker and Mayor Johnson are not in a room somewhere with every department head and every agency and every service that provides something to the state, to the Chicagoland area with almost 3 million people in it, to Cook County, and they're not asking every department head, what are you most afraid of in terms of your services? And how do we prevent that fear that you have? What do you need? Let's start to find a way to identify the problems before they happen. We're great at reacting, but we're bad at preventing. And when you watch this, this may not have been 100% preventable, but I have to think that with the correct allocation of funds, and not just funds, but of mindset, that prevention is our key. We're living in a danger. Hey, you know, look, we're not in Chicago area. We're not in danger of having wildfires, but we certainly have tornadoes and floods and ice storms and snowstorms. We've got our own problems here, and we've lived through them. If you lived through the late 70s, you know how this city was crippled when it snowed, and Mayor Bolandic didn't have a clue as to how to shovel the snow and plow the snow. The city was shut down for a week. Prevention, please. If we learn one thing from this horrific event that's going on in the Los Angeles area, I hope we can begin to prevent things as opposed to just react. We spend 10 times as much, and we put people's lives in danger and the loss of property. So anyway, hopefully we can learn a lesson. Our thoughts are with the people in Los Angeles.
I want you to get mad.
Jim Toronto with you here, filling in for Dean Richards this morning. But listen anyway. Oh, I love that little speech by the iconic Howard Beale from the film and also the play Network. I had the amazing opportunity to play that role in that play in 2024, last summer, and deliver that monologue and many others as Howard Beale, and it was one of the most exciting times of my acting career, and I have this man to thank. Charles Askenizer, who is the founder and artistic director of Invictus Theater Company in Chicago. Welcome to the show. Does anybody ever call you Chuck?
back in high school, but no longer.
No longer. Okay. I might start calling you Chuck from now on.
We'll see how long that lasts.
Yeah, right. Well, I wanted to have Charles
on. Good morning
to you. Good morning to you. I wanted to have Charles on because, as I said, we had a great collaboration as we've had over the last 2.5 years with some great shows, but I had such a great, great time in the Jeff-recommended show, Network, based on the film. You heard that little clip there from, I'm blanking on his name, Peter Finch, who won the Academy Award as Howard Beale. And then later, back in 2018 or 2019, I believe, Bryan Cranston played that role on Broadway and won the Tony and also won the Olivier Award as Howard Beale when he did the show first in the United Kingdom. And I wanted to bring on Charles because just this past week or so, Invictus Theater announced its new season for 2025. And so I thought it'd be a great opportunity to talk about what's going on this year at Invictus Theater. So what are we going to see if we go to your theater there on Irving Park near Kedzie?
Yeah, well, you're gonna see a year of great theater, that's for sure. So we're going to be producing William Shakespeare's The Winter's Tale and Tony Kushner's Angels in America, both parts in repertory, and then Marcus Gardley's The House That Will Not Stand will round out our season for the year.
And usually when you put together, and I know that you've got other people on the board and in your company who may give input, but I'm sure for the most part, I don't know, is the entire conception of the season and the shows, is it start with you, or how do you do that?
Yeah. Usually we pick a Shakespeare show, and then from that Shakespeare show, we try to find themes that we can find other plays that would pair well with it. And so the theme of this year was magic, but it sort of turned into this magic and hope sort of year, because The Winter's Tale is so much about magic and hope and wonder. And then Angels in America, similarly. So it's this odyssey through 1980s, the AIDS crisis. But it is totally infused with angels and ghosts and magical realism, and the same for The House That Will Not Stand too. It's this wealthy woman of color in 1800s New Orleans, right before the purchase of Louisiana territories by the United States, and she's got this estate that she looks to hold on to, and it's she stands to lose it all, and as including her freedom once Louisiana becomes a part of the United States. So it's but it's also infused with magic as well, and I think that there is a sort of hopeful sense, but I think all the shows in the season sort of look at hope but after a period of struggle, and how magic kind of we have to sort of believe that hope and good times will come.
Now, The Winter's Tale is a play that is one of his Shakespeare's later plays, and it's not produced or performed all that much. I mean, just this past season, just a few months ago, you ended the 2024 season with Macbeth, or should I say the Scottish play.
Yeah. Well, I don't think we're in a theater, so I think it's okay to say.
Yeah, as a side note, folks, as a side note, there's a little behind the curtains here. So let me mention this little anecdote. So if you are a theater person, there is a superstition in the theater that you do not say the name of Macbeth if you are in a theater. It's bad luck for the production. Somewhere down the line, a production of Macbeth had some terrible things happen, and so I don't know when this date back, but it's a very well-known theater superstition. So as I said, this summer I was in a production working with Charles, doing network, and at one of the rehearsals, I just casually, when we were talking about something, I just casually, right. Yeah. Oh, you forgot this already? Oh, I haven't. Oh my gosh.
I did.
Oh, I get a headache just thinking about it. So we were talking about something completely unrelated. It was an informational thing. It was just a short little conversation between Charles and I. The other cast members were there, but it was kind of when we were done with rehearsal, and I was just kind of, is that in the same place where we did Macbeth? You know, so I said the word Macbeth in the theater. Well, Charles jumped about 20 feet in the air.
In a room full of actors.
Yeah,
too,
in a room.
You.
Yeah, in a room
who
full of
their
actors.
Own superstition.
Yeah, yeah. So I, you know, and I once again, it was completely inadvertent. I was just into the conversation, and then I had to make a reference to the play because it was important to our conversation. But what you're supposed to say, if you have to reference it, most people, if you're in a theater, you have to say, you say the Scottish play because it takes place in Scotland. Or I noticed the way you were getting around it. With other people that were talking about it, you were calling it Mackers.
Yeah, that's pretty common.
Yeah, so you were getting around that, and I heard the little Mackers thing going on as well as the Scottish play. But of course, I blurted out Macbeth. So Charles jumped up 5 feet in the air. All the other actors looked at me with this like you all thought they were on the poster of Home Alone when. When Macaulay Culkin's face with their hands on the side of their face and this scary look. So I realized that I broke like one of the major rules of theater. And so first I tried to play it off. I was like, oh, come on. I kind of rolled my eyes. But then I could see that this was no laughing matter. And so I decided to not only remove the curse, because there are ways to remove the curse if someone is stupid enough to do it. And so not only did I, there's like several, there's like five things that you could possibly do to remove the curse. I just didn't, at the next rehearsal, not only did I do, I just didn't do one of the things. I did all five to make sure, because I didn't want if anything ever happened, if somebody fell or, you know, a piece of scenery toppled, I didn't want people to point to me and say, ah, see, you said it, you know, 3 months ago. So I did all five.
What were the five things? It was spin around.
Yeah, you have to spin around. First, you have to spin around. You have to spit. You have to. Oh gosh.
Was it recite a piece of Hamlet? Was
you had to recite any kind of other Shakespeare. I did the other three, and then I brought a skull with me, and I recited the line of "Alas, poor Yorick, I knew him, Horatio." To satisfy the Shakespeare line. And in fact, then I used I kept the skull with us, and he was both on the set during rehearsals and in the dressing room during the run, and I told everybody to please rub Yorick's head before every show. So he became kind of the mascot for the show, but that was kind of fun. But the good thing is that it must have worked, because we had a great run, a great success.
Yes,
we were Jeff nominated. We had sold out shows. We were among the best selling shows that you've had at Invictus. So I guess it was good that happened.
Yeah. I think you reversed the juju and made it into the positive vibe.
So how did you decide to pick A Winter's Tale?
Well, you know, it's like you said, it's a play that isn't done very often, and it's always, you know, I always say this about the Shakespeare play that I happen to be working on, but it is one of my favorites. But it's just this really beautiful and complex play, and Like I said, I think it really deals with themes of faith and hope and wonder, which I think, you know, people kind of need a little dose of right now. There's so much kind of negative stuff in the world, and I think it's a nice escape, and not even just an escape, but to give people that, yes, we will make it through. And I think thematically, I really latched onto it. And, you know, sometimes I'm thinking, okay, what will we do next season? And the play just kind of finds me, or I find the play. And sometimes there's more thought in it than that, but I think it's just kind of where what feels right in my gut. And that was Winter's Tale was it.
And when does that open?
So that opens on March 17th. We go into previews on March 11th, and then it runs through April 20th.
And, of course, now this is going to be a huge and very ambitious undertaking to do both plays of Tony Kushner's Tony Award-winning play, Angels in America, both the Millennium Approaches and Perestroika. I was lucky enough to see those on Broadway many, many years ago. They're powerful plays. It takes you back. To the 80s, when the AIDS epidemic was just starting, and the prejudice that was involved, and the uncertainty of what was happening, and the fear, it's hard to describe what the show is, because there's so much going on. As you said, there's ghosts, and there's political statements, and there's contemporary things, and there's angels. Yeah. I mean, but you're going to actually run both of them at the same time. So how is that going to work?
Yeah, so we're going to be doing both parts in rep, and then so Friday nights will be part one, so just doing that part one, Millennium Approaches, and then Saturdays, so we're going to do an earlier Saturday matinee. It'll start at noon, because both parts are 3.5 hours long. So Saturday matinee will be part one, and then Saturday evening will be part two, which is Perestroika, so that if someone was so inclined for 7 hours of really, really, really good theater, they could see the entire thing in one day. And I do encourage people to do so. I think both parts by themselves are really good and wonderful, but I think they're made all the better by seeing them all in one go. The schedule is.
Yeah, I'm sorry. That's how I did see it. I saw it in Broadway. I saw Millennium Approaches in the afternoon, and I saw Perestroika in the evening.
And what was your experience? I mean, I'm sure it was.
Wow, it was just incredible. I mean, you walked out of there just you were numb, really. You know.
Yeah.
It was a numbing, moving experience, no question about it.
Yeah.
And when does that open?
So that goes into previews on June 13th, and then it opens on June 28th, and it runs through September 7th. And again, it's Friday nights are part one. Saturdays, we're doing part one and part two. Sunday matinee, it's just part two. And then Monday nights, we will alternate between part one and part two.
And that will all be happening at the Invictus Theater. What's the address there?
So that's 3014 West Irving Park Road. Yeah, it's the former Windy City Playhouse space. The venue is still called the Windy City Playhouse space.
Yeah, and for shakes here, it's basically, no pun intended, it's on it's on Irving near Kedzie. So just to give you an idea of where it is on Irving Park, it's on Irving near Kedzie. I'm talking to Charles Eskenizer, who's the founder and the artistic director of Invictus Theater here in Chicago. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back to talk about a little more about what's going on at the theater. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards, no switching, is Charles Eskenizer, who is the founder and the artistic director of the Invictus Theater Company here in Chicago. Charles, you mentioned your venue, the space where you do the plays at on Irving. What is the address again? 31 what?
It's 3014 West Irving Park Road.
3014 West Irving Park, Irving Park in Kedzie. What a year 2024 was for Invictus. We don't have too much time, but I just want to get a big thing. Your original space that used to be in the Edgewater area was damaged by fire in 2023, just after we had done our show, The Crucible, there, not far after that, a couple of weeks. And you were basically without a quote-unquote home or venue. As luck would have it, the Windy City Playhouse, which has been around for a while and had been closed, was available. It certainly was. It's a bigger place, a beautiful lobby, a bar, 90 seats as opposed to what did you have before in, on Thorndale there? How many seats did you have?
30.
Yeah. And maybe and we won't tell the fire marshal how many times you used to sneak a few more people in.
Not that many.
but no, and so now, I mean, it's a great venue to see a show. As I said, I was just there in the summer doing network. It was great to play to that audience the way the theater is there. It's a great theater experience for an audience member to really enjoy, and it gives you a lot of creativity in terms of sets and the ability to do things. I'm sure with Angels in America, the iconic view or the iconic image is a giant angel. Any plans for the angel?
Yeah, well, I mean, I can't, you know, give away our secret set. People will just have to come see the show. But yes, there is certainly a big element of spectacle that I think is really feasible in that space. I want to say, too, that the House That Will Not Stand, which comes after that, is also going to have a lot of really wonderful, magical stuff, too. And that goes in previews October 28th and opens November 3rd and closes December 14th. So that's also going to be a really cool show.
Yeah, so that's you got your full card there. And I have to say that kudos to your 2024 season. Not only was it a difficult transition to move into a new space and put up a show almost within weeks of moving in, but all four shows that Invictus produced last year in 2024, Top Dog, Underdog, Network, Three Sisters, the Chekhov play, and then Macbeth, all four of them received Jeff recommendations. So we'll hopefully within the next month or so, we'll get the non-equity Jeff nominations, and hopefully, as has in the last couple of years, Invictus will certainly be among the most recognized. So fingers crossed for our not only our production of Network, but all the shows that you guys did this year. It was a very great season, so congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you, Jim. I appreciate that.
And
we have a lot of really talented artists working on it, their work deserves to be recognized.
And so how do people get tickets?
So you can go to our website. It's www.invictustheaterco.com. So that's Invictus, INVICTUS. And then it's theater spelled the fancy way, theatre, and then co.com. So www.invictustheatre.com.
Yeah, it's one of the great and ambitious and adventurous and quality storefront theaters. It really isn't even a storefront. When you go there, it's as I said, the physical plant now of this theater with a beautiful lobby and a bar and a big stage area to really bring some great dramatic and fun theater to life. Congratulations. Best of luck. And I'll be at some audition somewhere for you this year, Charles.
I hope so. I can't wait to see you, Jim.
Charles Askenizer, the founder and artistic director of Invictus Theater here in Chicago. Right now, it is 10:30 and time for Dave Schwann with the news. Jim Toronto with you this morning. Elton Jim filling in for Dean Richards, but hopefully you listened anyway. it's 10:36 or so here on a Sunday morning, a little blustery, a little snowy. Pretty much looks like January right now. That's the way January pretty much goes around here in Chicago. We'll be only here for about another 10 minutes. We're going to hand things off to Dave Ennett. I believe they are at Northwestern, and the Northwestern Wildcats will be hosting the Michigan State Spartans. Pregame at 10:45 and then tip off at 11. Before we go, I just wanted to ask this question. I don't know if I'm going to have time to take any calls, but maybe you can text me while I'm talking and let me know. So am I the only person in the United States who doesn't play Wordle? Colin, do you play Wordle? Or is that too, are you too young to play Yerd?
I don't play it religiously, Wordle. But I do. I'll have phases where I play every day for a month.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's not just an age thing.
No.
Because I have to tell you, I have never played Wordle. I've seen it. I see people obsessed with it. I see people posting their Wordle scores on Facebook and other, social media platforms. I see their heads buried in their phones. I think I've always thought that they were either looking through the news to be informed or perhaps texting. I saw fingers flying around and I figured, wow, these are people. I mean, they must be into some intense conversations. And then I casually would walk behind them if I'm in an airport or somewhere and just kind of looking like, oh, it looks like Wordle. Everybody with the Wordle. Now, look, I was never big into video games, and it's not an age thing because I've been around long enough. I was there for Pong. Remember Pong, Dave?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Barely. I was going to mention that my girlfriend plays Wordle.
Yeah. Do you play Wordle?
No.
No.
No, I've helped her when she's been stuck on some words, you know. But
isn't this interesting that we don't play Wordle, and yet we deal in words? I've been a writer for 30 some years. You deal with words, you write your newscasts, and yet you don't play Wordle.
No.
You'd think that we would, you know, I'm something of a wordsmith. When I listen to a song, I listen to the lyrics first. I'm moved more by the words than I am the melody and things. But this Wordle, it hasn't really been on my radar. But I'm wondering, should I play Wordle? Am I missing something? Now,
there are some very challenging puzzles on that thing, I can tell you.
Yeah, now, I thought maybe it was an age thing because
not
most
necessarily.
Of the... Now, Colin here, the producer today, says that he plays Wordle on and off. He's a young guy. He was quick enough to tell us how old he is to make us feel, how young he is to make us feel old earlier in the show. But no, so it's clearly...
Hey, at least he knows what a 45 RPM record is.
Very good. Right, yeah. But I mean, like I said, people say, oh, well, you know, you don't play video games. No, I was around for Pong. I was around for Atari at the beginning. I was around for Sega. I was around when there was Donkey Kong and Mario's and all this other stuff. I just never got into video games. The one video game, electronic game. Do you remember this one, Dave? The electronic football game, the handheld?
Yeah, yeah.
The white one with the red dashes?
And again, I never really played it, but I had friends who did, and you'd see it, you know, in places, airports and so forth.
Now, that was the one
time.
Yeah, that was the one thing that I did play.
Yeah.
But everything else. So it's not an age thing, like, oh, you're too old. No. The video game evolution was right in my sweet spot. But I was more of a music and a movie person, a television person. So I didn't really go for the video games. But I swear, I mean, I think my wife either plays Wordle or another offshoot. There's so many different games, too, now. I mean, you look on television, they're doing commercials for, I mean, what's this Candy Crush thing?
I know people that do the Candy Crush thing.
I have no... Now, do you do Candy Crush, Colin?
I don't.
Talk about alliteration.
I don't play Candy Crush, but it's in one of the long lines of, like, the matching. Like, you match three, you match four in a line, and then something happens.
So what are the cool games? We got Wordle, we got Candy... Like, do you know some of the cool...
The New York Times games, which has Wordle.
Like the crossword puzzle?
The crossword connections, where connections is... They give you 16 words and four... matching ones all are under the same umbrella, so you have to match four words with the same theme. That one's really fun.
So that's all. So they all seem to kind of be word based.
Yeah, they're all word based. They're all word logic puzzles, like Sudoku. It very much is like a puzzle game.
Now, did you do Sudoku, Shawnee?
No, again.
Neither did I.
No,
I know John Williams made a career out of it.
Yeah.
I never did it.
No, I once in a great while, you know, if someone I knew was, again, my girlfriend did Sudoku and Wordle and all of those. But on a regular basis, no, not at all.
Yeah.
And I never really did a crossword puzzle either.
I used to do crossword puzzles, but the one I used to do mainly was the TV Guide crossword puzzle, which was very easy. It was like Charlie's blank, Angels, you know, all in the blank.
Lucille.
Yeah. I love blank. You know, so those were pretty easy. But no, and believe me.
Jed C.
Yeah, right, exactly. Eight-letter word with a C, you know. No, but I feel like I'm missing out. Everybody really seems to enjoy it. I've got a text here from somebody, and they're talking, hey, 630 says, hey, I play Wordle every day. I have a 97% win rate. It's a very nice little daily accomplishment. I think that's so cool. I'm wondering, am I missing out? Because I'm looking looking around, we recently went to a major airport, and I saw everybody, and I walked behind them. That's what I was saying. And I saw all these people. I thought they were texting, or I thought they were scanning, and they were just wordling. And I was like, I wonder if in 2025, forget the resolutions, I need to learn Wordle. I don't know. I'm kind of up in the air because I don't know whether I love words. I love to watch shows like game shows that have words in it. So maybe I'm.
Did when you were in school, did you have as part of your English class curriculum a section on vocabulary and learning new words?
Oh, I love vocabulary and spelling.
I got A's in it all the time. I always constantly liked learning new words. I thought they were interesting.
That's what I'm saying. This is so ironic that we are word people. So this really should be right in in our wheelhouse, and for whatever reason,
I want to since we have Colin with us on this morning, should tell you, Jim, that he is a very well-read individual. I'm talking about reading people like John Steinbeck and Ernest Hemingway.
Oh, nice!
This man knows it. Yeah,
nice, very good. So that's why he's playing Wordle and Connections. Well, I'm going to look into it. I don't know if I'm ready. I might put my toe in the water, but I just wanted to throw that out because I just felt like so out of it. Everybody seems to be wordling. I didn't know if it was, is Wordle passé, Colin, or is it still cool?
It's gotten over its initial like golden era where everybody in the world was doing it, but it's definitely reached a niche where the people that do like the puzzle games, that do like connections and crosswords, it's fit right in that little pocket.
Yeah. And then and all you see on TV too are all these other, there's some farm game I see Drew Barrymore talking about, and then there's all these slots now, everybody's, you know, with the gambling on the phone. So wow, I just I use my phone to check emails and texts. I don't really play games or watch movies, but maybe in 2025 that'll change. Anyway, Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards. I hope you listened anyway. I hope you had a good time. I sure did. It was a short show, but fun nonetheless. I tried to do as much as I could, jam as much as I could into that time. Hopefully we did a good job, and hopefully you have a great day today. We're going to pass things off now to Dave Ennett and Billy McKinney, who will be doing the Northwestern Michigan State game.